XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Coming to you here from Percy Warner Park in Nashville, and taking some rain right now, taking some thunderstorm rain, actually. You don't have to worry about tomorrow's Iroquois card coming off the turf, because it's not that there's no option. They're not going to run it on Old Hickory Road. the conditions will be what the conditions are, and you know, the jumpers actually like some give in the ground, and I think that's probably what we're going to get. Supposed to end a little bit later this morning, and then we're just going to have to deal with whatever comes subsequently. Haven't checked the rest of the Northeast because there's actually lots of good turf racing scheduled, but, you know, particularly looking over at Belmont. You got the Man of War tomorrow, and again, I imagine there's no way the Grade One Man of War comes off, but we'll see. We'll watch and see if I haven't checked the Naira feed here to see if they've already addressed. They have not that I could see, addressed turf today. So they might be waiting to make a call. But it feels like the next couple of days for, you know, Pimlico, Hi-Ho, and they got underway, as well as Belmont back running, Churchill, a couple of days. And in fact, there was even a quick note. I went off and didn't expect to go in this direction, but how about Shug yesterday, that Dreams of Tomorrow, even money, but Shug pretty much told you Dreams of Tomorrow, five horse field, but $4 and change. And Phil Bauer's two horses, Johnny's Fireball, won the nightcap yesterday, paid $6.50. And that other one, the Prince's Spur, who he said was going to be, and it's going to be in Little Tough, Giant Game for Dale, that figured, you know, prominently scratched out of Derby undercard for that spot yesterday. And a good move, and comes away with a win wire to wire under Jake Roman's new jock. Not new, but because that was just caught my eye, kind of watching the results yesterday. Got the lay of the land here a little bit, and had a wonderful evening last night at a fascinating place. And we're going to catch up with Dwight and with Bill Gallo and Woodbury Payne. But last night, a nice gathering of the Iroquois team, and Bill Gallo in town, head of National Steeplechase. And they took us out, Mare Bulls, which was fabulous. And there's a fascinating story on this, basically between here and where we're staying in Brentwood. And it was a mammoth standardbred farm. And of course, you know, it doesn't come up all that often, but Tennessee, home of the walking horse, and if you go back to the 1800s, the early 1800s, Tennessee was, you know, a major producer of thoroughbreds as well. You know, you got the same, essentially, you've got the same limestone, foundation that provides the, you know, the nutrients to the horses in Kentucky. Why? Well, one of the reasons Kentucky is such a terrific place to breed and raise horses, and, you know, follow, if you follow the the longitude, right? Maryland, you know, right across. There's a lot of that. All of this information carefully hidden in books. Most notably, W.H.P. Robertson's The History of Thoroughbred Racing in America. Start there. Of course, long out of print, so be prepared. It's not really a coffee table book. It's just a big, oversized book that is absolutely wonderful. And you want to learn the history of the sport, that's the place to start. Where are we going to start today? Well, we've got opening day at Monmouth tomorrow, and we will talk in hour three to Dennis Drazen. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think I saw somebody tweet, and I didn't open it up, but I saw a tweet roll by that, you know, happy anniversary to sports betting. And so I'm guessing that the fabulous. How about that? I'm desperate to get my hair cut, and they've got that's not going to work. that I'm still on the air, actually, so that's going to be a problem. All right, somebody just handed me a note saying we got you a haircut appointment, but I'll still be on the air. It's not going to that's not happening. Dennis Drazen's going to join us, and there's real progress for Monmouth and for Jersey in the fixed odds storyline, and we'll get some of that from Dennis. And of course, when we get down there for Haskell, but there's for Jersey players, there's going to be wider offerings in terms of fixed odds wagering, and Tampa, and Canterbury, Delaware, getting ready to start, of course, Canterbury too, Hawthorne, Emerald, Century Mile, and then when Monmouth runs at Meadowlands in September as well. So there's progress, and there's also other markets, Colorado notably, SIS, making progress as well. It's a slow, steady. People are working diligently behind the scenes, and we'll get a update from Dennis, and I think next week from BetMakers CEO Jake Henson is supposed to join us as well. So we'll get the latest from Dennis, but looking forward to having Monmouth back on the betting menu, the Long Branch. And for those of you that have looked at the Peter Pan and the Long Branch, which are both part of the cross-country Pick Five, which we'll discuss with Nick Tamaro in just a couple of minutes. We'll also get Nick's post-derby thoughts. We've got quite a bit of post-derby analysis yet. Dave Grenning will join us, and of course, with the good racing. Harry Rice just told me that the weather's beautiful right now in New York. I know the weather patterns pretty well. Yeah, this rain is heading your way, guaranteed. But Dave Grenning will join us, and we'll talk about, we got three stakes tomorrow, and the vagrancy on Sunday. So things starting to really heat up at Belmont. So we'll talk to Dave Scully and Shapiro, of course, this morning as well. Hammer in hour three. And Dennis Drazen is mentioned. And I didn't reach out to him yet, but I think I want to ask Mike Welch to pop in and get Welch's feedback. But I do want to glance at this Royal Palm. I mentioned it yesterday. These two Royal Palm juvenile races that are winning your ins to get to Royal Ascot. Like Wesley Ward needs any help. And Wesley's got two, as I mentioned, two major players for these races. That holding the line for Steve Coffin. How great a story would that be? Steve Coffin returns to Europe. And and then in the boys race, and then in the girls race, comes back with a runner for Stone Street as well. Ocean Mermaid, a Kingman that was bred abroad. So interesting. Holding the Line as well was bred in Ireland, and Ocean Mermaid in Britain. So I think, yeah, I think we'll get Mike in for a quick pop. All right. The aside I've started to tell you about on the Long Branch and the Peter Pan, reached out to Al Gold yesterday, and Slip Mahoney will run at Monmouth. All right? So take Slip Mahoney out of Saturday's Peter Pan, FYI. All right? Where's my where is my Belmont? There it is. There's the Belmont materials. Leaves you with a field of eight, led by Bishop's Bay, certainly. But there's some other interesting potential in there, so we'll see what Nick's thoughts are. On the news front, of course, there is the follow-up to the Forte story involving the long-awaited adjudication and positive call that, as I said, I've said for a couple of days, was out there. There's also been the subsequent breathless reporting of mind control at parks, which also has been, you know, widely known in terms of, you know, waiting for a adjudication. So this obviously, this whole scenario and storyline will play out, and we'll report, I would think, more next week, even though, you know, Preakness takes precedent. The presence of Alan Foreman will certainly help in terms of, you know, discussion. And, you know, a lot of this very, very well could be, you know, in terms of addressing the test, reporting a result, and, you know, putting it through the system. HISA promises that that's something that they can, you know, that they will be able to expedite. So they're certainly going to get their chance, it would appear. So we'll see, you know, starting May, 10 days from now, May 22nd. We'll see. The rest of the action, well, from there, I suppose, you know, Woodbine starting to pull, the train starting to pull out of the station a little bit. The Whimsical tomorrow, the Jacques Cartier on Sunday. Santa Anita arcing toward the back end of their calendar as well. The San Luis Rey closes the card tomorrow. We'll talk to Hammer. And then, of course, what's going on here, which is extensive. And the yeah, there we go. A couple of there's the coin collector at Charlestown. In fact, you know, Larry Curtis, who, you know, was with the staff here for the steward stand. Larry Curtis, we were with together with them together as, you know, as part of that group last night, and he had a horse running a filly. Running at Charlestown, and won, and she won a Juba filly, got claimed, but it's a nice looking filly, and then the Juba fans rejoice. I think her name was Juba Baby. So in the middle of the dinner last night, everybody paused to watch Larry Curtis's filly run, and she was even money or 4 to 5. All right, let's get Nick Tamaro coming in, and we'll get started. Looking forward to they're out there walking the And here, there we are. They're coming off the course now, I think. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get started with Nick. And I'll tell you what, things are encouraging. I just got more notification that it looks like it's supposed to be nice, supposed to be okay in New York tomorrow. So don't worry about any rain issue. Nick Tamaro, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I appreciated your Nashville perspective last night. You were telling me about your Nashville experiences.
Yeah, great spot. Not one to be missed if you're within range. And I guess a lot of people in racing could combine a Nashville trip with a Kentucky Downs visit. So something well worth doing. It's a great city, and the Bic Across America Tour obviously is picking up steam.
Yeah, it better have a head of steam Sunday morning. I dropped Tina off at the airport like at, I don't know, quarter of five, and then I've got a 10-hour drive to Baltimore. So, yeah, that's all right. I'm going to cover some ground that I used to cover when way back when, and when I worked for Cannon Mills out of they sent us down to Kannapolis, which was the headquarters, and now probably better known for being the headquarters of Lowe's. And for Charlotte Motor Speedway, but back then it was still the company town, and for about 3 months I got to traverse North Carolina to visit all the sheet plant and the blanket. I think the blanket plant was actually close to Asheville in a town called Swannanoa. And so covered all through there and up to I like the region a lot. And so a little Knoxville, Asheville, and then I think maybe we'll head up toward Boone on the Blue Ridge. Haven't been through there, Nick, and it really, it'll shake me up to say this. I haven't been through there in 40 years, so I'm kind of looking forward to it. I regret there's one place that I can't go to. The Biltmore Dairy, which was basically at the base of the entrance to the Biltmore Estate, that was out of this world, and it's gone now. So,
you know, Steve, I'm just glad there's going to be racing at Saratoga in a couple of months, so you can be home for 40 days.
I don't know if Tina's happy about that, but we'll...
So is this the key to marriage? Is that what you're what you're telling me, is that you stay away from each other as much as possible?
Well, not as much as possible, but it you know. That absence makes the heart grow fonder kind of thing.
That's right. Eccentric types like you and I probably people need a respite from us more often than not.
There's a lot to be said about that. I woke up to a text that said, I get to see my hubbend, which is our nickname for me, apparently, hubbend without an S. And she said, I get to see my hubbend today. So she's looking forward to seeing me.
So you stayed away just long enough.
I think so.
You slid under the wire.
Well, and we're going to get two weekends back to back, because she'll be in Baltimore as well on Friday night. So we're like, she's been dying to come to Nashville for ages. So
killing multiple birds with one stone. Can't beat that.
Exactly. Let's get some Derby weekend recapping in from you, and we certainly. I think helped people in certain spots. How did your weekend go?
Yeah, I had a good day to close out Friday at Churchill, and a lot of frustration Saturday. But, you know, I think as far as the Derby goes, for me, it was a good reminder that for all of the effort and energy we put into this race, it still needs to be handicapped in a conventional way. And I lament having complicated it a little bit more than I should have, because, you know, in the situation of a normal race and the normal way that I handicap basing my opinion on trips and things that happen in the way races unfold, Mage is kind of worse I would have bet 10 out of 10 times. And, you know, I got caught up in the hubbub about Forte running him down, and maybe he's distance limited, and maybe it's too much too soon, and how can you bet a one other than eligible horse in the Derby, so on and so forth. And, you know, here he came barreling by everybody, and I thought to myself, yeah, it actually was that simple. So it was it was, you know, frustrating in that regard. And so I bet two fills, and so obviously that was frustrating as well. So it just kind of stacked on top of one another with those items. But, you know, that's how it goes. That's the difficulty of winning, betting on racing, period, but especially with difficult races like the Derby. So a little frustrating in that regard, but I think the best news was that I got my Preakness Future bets in. So I'm ready to roll with that. I have First Mission, and I had First Mission, two fills, and Confidence Game, so it looks like it'll just be First Mission and Confidence Game, and that'll be fine. But, you know, you got to take your hat off to Mage and his connections for getting him to handle that extra ground without an issue. And, you know, Ramiro Restrepo, who is now more or less his representative, who's a good guy, and he said that this is a move that Gustavo Delgado has made with success in his native country, and it certainly played out that way, getting Mage to handle the extra ground. And I don't know, I don't think he's a, I wouldn't call him a likely Preakness winner, but, you know, he'll go in as the favorite, and they'll all take their shot at him.
And it's funny, we were kicking this around with Anthony Sagan, you know, two fills, and it would sure feel like, you know, for those trying to look ahead and consider his Triple Crown chances, I mean, this is Delgado's wheelhouse. And once the Derby is annexed, this race, the Preakness next week, is going to be the, you know, frankly, to me, this is the challenge now. I mean, if we're trying to project him to win three straight here, you would think, even though he's an off-the-pace type, which doesn't necessarily translate at Belmont, but, you know, in terms of a horse that is drilled and you know, been trained with long, slow gallops for stamina building, and Delgado's got three Venezuelan Triple Crowns in his back pocket. It gets very intriguing if he can win next Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of alluded to, historically, horses that win the Derby from off the pace with a big pace setup don't have a good record at Pimlico, in addition to having a running style that doesn't really help at Belmont. So, you know, that being said, this is a horse who's made four starts, and his first start, he went wire-to-wire sprinting. So it's not like he has no speed.
Yep.
It's just a matter of his speed maybe being a little dulled as they've tried to train a little bit more stamina into him. But, you know, you'd like to think that there's a way the connections can make that happen. You know, I don't know what the situation is going to be like in terms of horses that are going to line up against him in the Belmont. There's obviously going to be quite a few, understandably, and some of them don't look as difficult to handle as a horse last year like a Modonical. So it's just a matter of who goes and, you know, what they're able to do in terms of being ready off the layoff and if they have the right conditioner and stuff like that. I'll tell you something I thought was very interesting as far as the turnaround. Gustavo Delgado has no problem running his horses back fast.
Yep.
And to put things in perspective, he has 84 starts in the last 5 years with horses coming back in 1 to 14 days. Todd Pletcher in the same category has 30. And Todd Pletcher has probably somewhere around 5 to 10 times the number of horses that Gustavo Delgado does. So it's not coming back quick is not going to bother him at all.
No, exactly. And you know, the 6 week between Florida Derby and last Saturday, there's a lot to like. How about the rest of the card? What did you come away with? Because it feels like there were a couple of horses, particularly up to the mark, that kind of announced themselves.
Yeah, you know, up to the mark was a horse who had hinted at really, really having pretty serious ability with that win on Fountain Youth Day, yeah, albeit against Allowance Company. And then, you know, running against Emmanuel and some of the other horses that were well beaten behind Chez Pierre, you felt like he still ran a pretty credible race. And so he announced himself very clearly the boss of this division. I would imagine he'll be pointed to races like the Manhattan and the Arlington Million. Looks like a mile and an eighth to a mile and a quarter is probably exactly where he's comfortable. I don't necessarily see them backing him down distance wise. Ultimately, he'll probably, you know, have to beat horses from overseas. But still, this was a very compelling performance, and you know, not that anybody is shedding a tear for Mike Rapoli and Todd Pletcher, but you felt like there was a little bit of a redemptive element to it with them having to deal with the situation with Forte and getting that win. Obviously not the same as winning a Derby, but yeah, it was a big performance. And look, I mean, Cody's wish, I think, and I tweeted afterwards, is pretty clearly the best horse in training at this point. So it was nice to see him get the job done in such an easy and facile way, even without really a great pace set up. So I'll be interested to see how he can stretch out a little bit more. He'll go to the Met Mile and the Whitney, and he's been successful, obviously, at a mile around two turns, but not beyond a mile around two turns. So I understand the connections wanting to get a little more aggressive there. And, you know, Steve, the performance of the weekend that went under the radar, because as far as the stakes went, it happened so early, was Smile Happy's winning the Ali Sheba.
Yeah.
And he ran great. Whether he is going to produce that again outside of Churchill or, you know, at all, period, that's the question. But he ran about as good a handicap race as we've seen in a while. And so I'm very intrigued by how he may have blossomed now as a four-year-old. I have my doubts about whether he'll stay at that level, but boy, I hope he does, because that was a very, very strong performance, and he looks like he'll be headed to Stephen Foster with maybe an opportunity for Kenny McPeat to swing him through Ascot right before that.
Well, and you talk about Friday, there was also red carpet ready, and we talked to co-owner Patrick Lewis yesterday, which was a lot of fun, the Upland Flats. In fact, Patrick, he kind of buried the lead on me yesterday, too. He had a horse run second that he was partnered on. I can't remember if it was a Churchill. I saw it later in the day, and I was like, he didn't even mention this horse. But, you know, Caravelle does what Caravelle does, really no resistance. Played hard. We had that conversation with Phil Bauer last Monday, which was really, or last Monday, 4 days ago. Obviously, she is going to shoulder her way into things. Who else? That Didia looks like she's going to be a player for Nacho Correas. It felt like a lot of divisions got, you know, sort of some leg ups and some, you know, some fresh faces to consider. Web Slinger's nice win. And, of course, we'll see Talk of the Nation come back, you know, in the next logical spot for Shug. General Jim, Shug's going to slowly, you know, stretch him out as appropriate. You know, from a quality standpoint, there was a lot to like. You know, the Pretty Mischievous win you alluded to. And, you know, by the way, I tried to warn you on Galloping Girl.
On which one?
On the runner-up, on Gambling Girl in that Oaks.
Yes. Yeah, I was very belligerent in that Oaks, and for some reason I convinced myself that the post was going to hurt Pretty Mischievous. It was like, I did things handicapping-wise, and I thought to myself, you left behind these kind of mistakes years ago. Like, what are you doing? So, yeah, a little frustrating in that regard. But, boy, she was, you know, she ran her race, and a lot of horses in there really didn't get as many, maybe as much of an opportunity because it wasn't because of an excuse. It was, they just weren't capable. You know, I kind of dug into the race to get a sense of why Wet Paint ran the way she did, and I came to the conclusion that, you know, Wet Paint had to run significantly faster early than she ever had before, and it took a massive toll. So, yeah, I mean, those are the things you have to understand when we're looking at these races at a high level. It's important to keep everything in context. So, yeah, some good performances, and nice to have some horses really come to the forefront that are going to make up some of the major divisions around the game now for most of the summer.
Well, and as we turn our attention to this weekend at Belmont, you know, I touched a little bit with it with Andy. You know, he was in Louisville, so he was not close to the action back in New York. But there were a few very notable performances. I mean, Repo Rocks continues to maraud, and you know, his presence in the Met Mile will be you know, ominous. You had is that appropriately put?
Yes, very well put.
Thank you, George Weaver. Happy for George to see pass the champagne. You know, kind of get going. That Ottoman fleet. I mean, Charlie Appleby's got another shot. We'll talk about, you know, momentarily today for, you know, tomorrow's Man of War. He's just a terror.
Yeah, well, we also rolled the red carpet out for him with that trip. I mean, he had quite the trip. He was able to save ground on the inside. He got a sweet run through an upper stretch and went on with it. But, yeah, I mean, the bottom line on that is that Charlie Appleby's doing nothing but sending over live horses and clearly has figured out, you know, who fits the shipping program, and his travel squad is very, very well developed. So that was a solid effort, no doubt. Repo Rocks, who you mentioned, is a horse that it's awfully hard to root for, but at the same time, when you want good horses in the game, you don't really want to root against him. It's a little tough to get behind those connections at times, knowing all that's gone on, but he'll make his way to the Met Mile, and yes, ominous is a good way to describe his presence in that race. We'll see. Hopefully Cody, it feels like Cody's wish is sort of, Cody's wish, of course, in his connections, right, which are really warm and fuzzy as well, but it almost feels like he's running in that race for the good of mankind. I'm probably stretching it, exaggerating it, but, you know, whatever. So, but that was a strong effort. Pastor Champagne, who, you know, had hinted at having some real ability, and I have some friends that are involved in the ownership, and, you know, I had always believed she was probably a mare that wanted to go a little bit shorter, but she's now actually blossomed into a pretty nice horse going a distance. So I was impressed by the race that she ran, and I'm looking forward to seeing her in the Phipps, which should be a really terrific race if we get, you know, Clairiere, and I'm sure Wayne Lucas will run Secret Oath in there. Hopefully not with a race in between. I imagine Phil Bauer will be at least a little inclined to try Played Hard in there. He might want to wait for Saratoga. But, yeah, good that you mentioned Phil Bauer. He's a guy that, you know, I learned to admire his work a little bit in 19 when he came up to Saratoga, and looking at workout reports and watching races, his horses were always training well. They pretty much all ran well. And, it was a very, very, he was a very easy guy to get behind. And that was an awfully game effort by Played Hard. And somebody like me, who's watched Johnny Velasquez for years, knows that, you know, when you get into a battle in the stretch with him, even at his age now, he's still going to be, he's going to give you a hell of a shot. And he did. So it was, that was one of the more exciting races of the weekend, with Secret Oath coming down the outside, and search results trying to come up the rail. It was a very, very compelling race. So fun weekend, and, you know, got enough good performances to have something to build on moving forward.
Let's move forward into tomorrow's Man of War, Peter Pan, and Run Happy card. 11 race card tomorrow at Belmont. And note that when you have a slate like this, there's the extra pick five and pick four that starts mid-card. And so starting at race four, there's the pick five, and it has to pay out when they slap these in. There's also a pick four that goes fifth through the eighth. So fourth through eighth, middle pick five, and fifth through eighth for the middle pick four. Of course, the cross country, and the cross country is fun. There's the which I wonder about this, you know, with this, what we're dealing with here locally, weather-wise. And, I mean, you know, I talk about volatile weather in Louisville. I mean, ridiculous. But the two stakes back-to-back with the Man of War and the Peter Pan. Start there, Nick. Let's talk about the two, fifth and the sixth at Belmont.
Yeah, these races go early. I'm not exactly sure why the Man of War was withheld from the pick six sequence. Other than that, they seem to fill a variety of different turf races for New York breds. But it certainly would have been a race deserving of being in there. I don't think by any means is it a race that should just be conceded to Warren Point, because you fear, Steve, at some point that we're just going to start assuming that Charlie Appleby's going to win every one of these races that he brings a horse over for, and he's not. And, you know, this horse is coming out of a race at in Qatar where the winner was a very middling Hong Kong type and did not come back to run particularly well. The fifth place finisher, Broom, did come back to win one of the races on Dubai World Cup night, but it was at 2 miles. And, you know, we know a little bit about who Broom is from him running over here. He's probably not much better than the balance of this field. The reason why Warren Point would end up being a heavy favorite in this race is because our horses in this division are just a little played out. And, you know, I think that was part of the reason why House Street got this insane amount of money in the Elkhorn. For everybody out there who bet on House Street, I want you to remember that Jorge Abreu is on a 56-race losing streak in graded stakes. So that's something that he's going to have to break out of at some point. But again, I wouldn't spend a lot of money trying to make it happen. As far as this race goes, you know, at this point, I've picked Red Knight. I sort of have a thing for Red Knight, who's back in New York, a New York bred who that they thought his career was just over, and they sent him to the farm. And I think somebody from the farm called the owner and said, you know, this horse still wants to run. And he relocated him to Mike Maker. And suddenly, of course, Mike Maker turned him into a little terror as a turf marathoner. And he ran great in the Elkhorn last time out. So did the winner, Verstappen, who was in here as well. The pace in that race ended up materializing quite nicely, and that helped him produce that late run. Irad is back on, who was in the irons for his McKnight victory. He looked like a pretty obvious horse to me. Value Engineering may have been a little bit hurt by a turf course that was on the damper side last time out. He ran well down in Florida. We'll see if he can reproduce some of that form back in New York. They look like the main alternatives. I don't think Channel Maker will be able to get away with enough of it on the front end to get brave, because you'll have strong tides stay somewhat in range. And Verstappen, for that matter, shouldn't be that far back either. He was a little bit farther back than you'd expect last time out. In fact, the Timeform U.S. Pace Protector actually has him on the lead. Strong tides and marathoner. He's got a little positional speed as well. So, you know, it's a race that doesn't – it's not included in any significant multi-race sequence as far as if you're playing the early pick five. I mean, I think I'm going to use Red Knight and Warren Point, and I'll probably have the winner among those two. But, again, I don't want to just start conceding these races to Warren Point or horses like Warren Point and Charlie Appleby because they've been so successful in the past.
You mentioned Verstappen, and I said yesterday that I hadn't even seen who had won the Miami Formula One, and in fact, Verstappen did win it.
It's just it's his world.
I did yesterday. We did the with Jeff Franklin. We did the winning with Thoroughgraph segment, and I, you know, House Street is underexposed in here, and you know. That allowance win at Gulfstream kind of stands up okay in here. So I thought there might be a little, maybe, and hadn't seen the morning line yet. 8-1. 8-1.
Better than the idiot that made him 10-1 at Keeneland. He went off the 2-1 favorite.
Who was that? The let's go to the Peter Pan. And in fact, let me give everybody, by the way, let me give you the race order as well. And where did it? It's on Derby Trail, of course. And
Cross Country Pick 5. Yeah, I think it goes Churchill 4. Belmont 5-6, Churchill 7, Monmouth 8.
Thank you. This is, did I move it accidentally at I don't know what I did with it. Oh, there it is. All right, boom. Let me get it in front of me. Starts at 2:13, right, with that maiden special at Churchill. So it's an early afternoon. It'll be over by 4 o'clock. It'll be over at 2:13 if you don't have the winner of the first leg.
Been there, done that.
Peter Pan, I told everybody, Slip Mahoney will run in Monmouth. So take Slip Mahoney out of your Peter Pan lineup.
Well, that's good to know. I wondered. I kind of figured with Al Gold being a Jersey guy that he'd end up going there. Brad doesn't like running his horses against each other, and that's, you know, I don't think he'd want to run anybody against Bishop's Bay. So Bishop's Bay is like he's a very hard horse to, I guess, get a fair assessment on, because he ran very well in his debut, and obviously First Mission did as well, and there's no question that First Mission has gotten better since that race. Bishop's Bay's next race was not very good. And now he's been given almost 2 months to come back in a graded stake, Brad Cox has these ridiculously good numbers switching off of Lasix in graded stakes on the dirt. He's 29% with a you know, like a $2.60 ROI. So there's no great concern there. But, you know, how much better is he going to get? He was on top of a ridiculously slow pace last time. He's got two real speed horses to his inside. He should get a good trip stalking them on the outside. But I have a hard time trusting him at 8-5. I'm going to pick a horse that normally from this barn I would gloss over very easily. But there's something to be said about this Arcangelo on the rail. This horse took real money. This is a Jenna Antonucci horse that took real money in a couple of starts in Florida before breaking his maiden at 2-1. All Magical Power and Mr. McGregor have done since that race is come back and significantly improve their buyer speed figures at Keeneland. Mr. McGregor improved his buyer speed figure by 15 points, and Magical Power ran even better in his next start as well. So that race, I think, was a lot better than it looks on paper. This is a horse that obviously is going to go more ground without any issue at all. And because of these connections, he is going to be totally overlooked. Magical Power improved his buyer figure by 3 points, Mr. McGregor by 19. This is a horse that on Timeform US, he got a 118 Timeform US figure, which is extremely high. I mean, that's higher than Bishop's Bay's maiden even, and his thoroughgraph number was good. So, I mean, this is a horse that just might be, in terms of providing value, might be a real diamond in the rough because, you know, his price relative to his speed figures is going to be enormous. And he's clearly a horse who trains well. He obviously posted a bullet on May 3rd at Belmont. So I'm going to land on him. I know. Jenna Antonucci is 1-37 on dirt. This is the only winner she's had in the last couple of years. It's not exactly the most heartwarming situation in terms of some of these stats. But sometimes good horses outrun low percentage trainers, and I'm going to take that approach to it. I just don't really trust a lot of other horses in here. There's a number of just total plotters like Classic Catch, who they're putting the blinkers on, hoping that maybe he stays a little closer early. I don't really think Henry Q wants to go a mile and an eighth. And again, I have those doubts about Bishop's Bay, so why not try a little price?
I completely agree. Javier Castellano from down inside, there's some ground saving to be had. I thought that, you know, Classic Catch, again, I hadn't seen a morning line yesterday when we were talking. 10-1 on Arcangelo. 9-2 on him. Yep. Yeah. All right.
As far as the Wood Memorial goes, you know, and I know that Slip Mahoney's coming out, but, you know, Slip Mahoney had real trouble in the Wood Memorial. Classic Catch didn't. Classic Catch is just slow. So he couldn't stay in range early, and he lost a bunch of ground. And so, but, I mean, that's pretty much always going to happen with him with that style. So there was something to be said for Slip Mahoney. There's not much to be said for Classic Catch. Even though I'm getting lonely on my Slip Mahoney bandwagon, I still think he's a horse that's got a little talent.
Well, it's May 12th, and being May 12th, I've already wished them both happy birthdays. Chuck Simon and my brother were born the same day, and which is funny because physically, if they make a remake of Twins, it would be great because Jamie's like, you know, 5'7", 160, and Chuck is Chuck.
Chuck's not.
No, exactly. Chuck, if you put some hair on Chuck, he'd pass for Sasquatch. Hey, Chuck. Chuck's probably listening and laughing. But happy birthday to my brother and Chuck Simon. I really appreciate that, actually, when there's people. My father and my late close friend John Hubbard had the same birthday. It just makes things easier. So if you want me to wish you a happy birthday on the air, make sure there's something easy to connect the dots. September 17th, which is my mother's birthday and my wedding anniversary with Antina. We were married on my mother's birthday. Things like that. November 20th, my birthday and Bo Derek's birthday. So
there's just all of this can happen at the same time. You gotta love it.
Well, and everyone knows your birthday. You put your birthday right out on the internet.
I plaster it all over everything for people to see. Exactly. Veritable national holiday.
December 15th. That's why he's NTAM 1215. You're probably wishing a happy birthday more than anybody on the internet.
I probably am, and you know what? This year is going to be a special one. This is going to be 4-0.
It doesn't. That's amazing because it that's amazing.
It feels like I've been around forever already, right?
It does, but you also have that you know that youthful continence.
Well, I hope I maintain it forever, Steve. One of these days, my sense of humor and my memory is going to go, and it's going to be very sad.
It's going to be ugly. Do we have a quick glance at this six-horse run happy?
Yeah, I had to go back to my buddy Drafted. I can't give up on him. I think he had enough trouble in the Tom Fool to be given another look here. I think the speed is a little suspect, so... I was actually looking at the race, and the morning line is on my PPs, and I just wasn't paying attention to it. And I was hoping he'd be a bit longer priced, but David is sharp, and he made him 3-1, so he's not going to be a big price. Barron seems like the other big contender, maybe a little bit of Candyman Rocket. Some of these other horses have issues maybe switching off of Lasix, so that'd be my concern. I wouldn't be surprised if it's an issue for Twisted Ride, who Michael Moore is winning like crazy, but this is a horse who'll come off of Lasix, who's been racing on it exclusively in the Mid-Atlantic. Barron's another horse who's not been quite as good without Lasix. David Jacobson's 0-6 switching off of Lasix. Candyman Rocket ran well in the Gulfstream Sprint, faltered at Oaklawn, but I don't know. I don't like holding bad Oaklawn performances against horses. Bill Mott is a guy whose horses really have not notoriously run that well at Oaklawn. So I don't want to hold that one too terribly much against him, and I'd probably give him another shot in this spot. But mainly 1-4 for me, with a little bit of the 2 as a backup.
Very nice. Did you look at the 10th yet?
Yes.
This is an interesting race. And
that's a super fun race.
Right?
Yeah.
There's some potentially emergent fillies, most notably to the outside. Chad and Peter Bradley have got Get Your Kicks, a quality road that was a first-time turf winner, second career start winner, and kind of interesting. And then Spansive, who was a wire-to-wire debut winner for... Pletcher and Rapoli, a Caracanti, one of your favorites. But Clement has got a horse that's a little interesting, and there's some things going on in this mile and a 16th first level allowance.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the interesting thing about Spansive, and I think if you look at their respective debuts, or not their turf debuts at least, between she and Get Your Kicks, I think you would assume moving forward, especially if you're a pace figure user, that Get Your Kicks would be better, because Spansive wired with an extremely slow pace, and Get Your Kicks was on top of a very hot pace, pulled clear late. I did think the competition was suspect behind Get Your Kicks. Well, there's two next out winners from Spansive's race, including a filly who won on Sunday at Belmont named Prerequisite, who improved her buyer speed figure by 15 points. Glorious Princess, the runner-up, broke her maiden next time out of Churchill and improved her buyer speed figure by 8. Todd Pletcher also has a bizarrely good record with second-time starters who won on debut on the turf. He's 30% with a 257 ROI. So, you know, that's a big deal, I think, for Spansive. I don't love speed at a mile and a 16th on the widener. I think it's just a very hard trip to sustain forward momentum on the front end. I got to tell you, Steve, I don't know what the hell Irad was doing on Free Look last time. I went back and watched this replay 4 or 5 times, and I mean, there's a point at the top of the stretch where he's practically across Tampa Bay. I don't know what he was doing angling out as wide as he did, and I think this filly is going to get a little bit overlooked because people aren't going to realize how bad her trip was last time, and they're going to get wrapped up in Spansive and Get Your Kicks. But I'm going to make a big bet on Free Look if she's 4-1 or so, and I think she'll be every bit of it with those two getting a lot of attention because there are two fillies in here who outfinished her in that race as well, and I don't think it matters at all. She had absolutely no chance with the ride he gave her.
There's also a horse that now again I've got to do a reference check with 6-1 the other Pletcher Alphabella for Don Alberto, the homebred, the Justified filly. That race in the Florida Oaks where she got beat Zop by Mission of Joy, that translates awfully well in here, and she may get a little overlooked.
Yeah, she had a pretty favorable trip that day, but she does feel like the one that'll be kind of the odd woman out. She was bad in the Appalachian. Again, that competition was much tougher. And obviously we saw some of those horses from the Appalachian come back and run well on the Derby weekend. So no big argument there. Gets the benefit of Lasix again with this being an allowance race. So, yeah, she feels like the kind of horse that if you want to take a critical approach of the 2 second-time starters, which I really don't think is the worst idea, then you're going to find your way into maybe playing Alphabella in the exact with free look. So I can tell you that if Alphabella slides in under free look, I'll cash.
And I do want to see one other horse here that I'm just curious looking at the I want to look at the dam of Binsky going to the grass because Mark Cassie.
She was a synthetic stake winner, and she was 0 for 4 on turf.
Okay.
I'm sorry, 0 for 9 on turf, but she was a synthetic stake winner. There are two winners on turf in the dam side family. So, I mean, there's reason to believe that this horse could improve on the turf. I mean, the problem is they've got her in a, this is a shark tank of a one other than, right? I mean, you're talking about some really tough horses in a one other than. This filly is a half to another miracle who won the My Frenchman for Joe Orsino, also won a stake race at Saratoga for the one and only Gary Contessa as a 2-year-old. So there was ability there. There was another turf winner named Any Given Trace. A couple other horses that tried turf with no success. But, yeah, I guess DJ consolidated their whole operation with Mark Cassie. You know, no surprise there given the success they've had together.
Very much. It's an interesting family that the Betts is. This is a Betts bred. Interesting. All right. Long Branch?
Yeah, you know, I guess the now the question, of course, the original question was whether Slip Mahoney would go here. The next question is which of these two Butch Reed horses are going to run here. And I don't know if he'll run both Dittinger and 90% Maddie. I mean, for that matter, Steve, I'll tell you, I like Hay Strike. And I think this is a Lasix situation. Kenny McPeak won this race last year with Dash Attack, who's basically an allowance horse. And two back, Hay Strike ran the best race of his career, and he did it with Lasix. It was the only time he's ever had it. So he was much more into the bit. He was much more aggressive, and he ran a very good race that day. So I'm looking for him to run back to that. He should get a good trip on the outside. Again, you know, for everybody playing Monmouth on opening weekend, just keep an eye on how the track is playing. There have been a lot of days where you've benefited from being a little outside, so that could end up happening again, and it'd be no great surprise. But good to have Slip Mahoney in there as well. I'll probably use the bookends and see which of those Butch Reed horses go. Obviously, if 90% Maddie goes, I'll be more inclined to use him than Dittinger. But I do think it's pretty much a three-horse race between Slip Mahoney and Hay Strike, and if 90% Maddie goes, that one.
I will see if we can't get an answer from Butchie. And, of course, any opportunity to reference Ray Dittinger, we're happy to make. The great Philly Inquirer and chronicler of all things Eagles. Butchie Reed answers instantly. He is running both.
Good. All right. Well, then I would include 90% Maddie as well.
All right. Let me just tell him to get lucky and how much I appreciate
Maybe
that.
Maybe he was listening, too. That'd be incredible, right? If he was listening and knew that you were about to ask.
Well, Jenny may have been. Mrs. Butch Reed. But she's training. He's got work to do. Nick, this was fabulous. And as always, I mean, those Churchill races, did you be on top of those or no?
I took a peek. I mean, nothing. I don't have anything crazy to say. I thought just say so on the inside in the fourth would be a little dangerous. These races are so tough, being such big fields, and obviously if they stay on turf, they're very competitive. The mile and 3/8 race later on, you know, I didn't exactly have a lean in any direction. It looked a little too tough for me. So I'll probably try and just wade through it very carefully as far as any kind of multi-race bet goes. I mean, Giroux looks like a horse that will really benefit from the extra ground, and Mike Maker always tough in these kind of scenarios. So pack your patience with races like that.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215, put it, you know, put the 1215, 1215, put it on your calendar. For all of you who've cashed tickets, thanks to Nick over the years, that's when you can express your gratitude.
Surely in a way that is more appropriate, as if probably some type of charity or something to donate to. But I try to be as magnanimous a man as possible.
Thank you, Nick. I love it. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Good luck. Safe travels.
Talk to you from Baltimore next week. Nick Tamaro, everybody. Let's get a quick conversation in. We've got, let me slip in, let me get Shapiro in, because he's got television to worry about in not too long a time. So let's get Scott Shapiro's recap. And you know who we're not going to have a chance to talk to? I thought Marty was going to, McGee was going to come by and see us at Churchill Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and I think he was settling into his new role, essentially, at as a jock agent. So we didn't talk to Marty. I was saving it to congratulate him because, you know, I cited Dick Powell and his interest in Mage, but Marty had made Mage his second choice behind Tappet Trice. So Marty McGee also put people on Mage. Scott Shapiro joins us, and sounds like he's already at the Downs.
What is going on, Steve? I did not put you on Mage. I wish I did.
No, that was for, that's all right. That's, we everybody, you know, I tell everybody, you know, you people have a certain, they have certain ideas about their Derby pick, and you can't move people off horses. You can only, you know, laud the merits of the one, you know, the one or ones that you think are live. I mean, it was two fills for me.
Oh,
you know, that was it. Oh. That helped, that's helped some people.
You deserve better. I mean, not that Mage didn't deserve to win, but, you know, two fills, just a tremendous effort.
How about you? How, you know, I know that it's hard when you're on the air and the responsibilities you've got. You know, I should mention, it falls to you to provide the instant after the wire, you know, the same way that Gabby Gaudette and Scott Hazelton, you know, places like Keeneland, you know, they give you that instant read and instant reaction as horses cross the wire. You do it on the Churchill feed, and you do really well because you've got to make
you.
Because you got to have organized thoughts, and you have got to have absorbed, you know, what transpired in the race and summarize it, and be aware of maybe historic proportions, or, you know, first grade one for somebody, or, you know, you've obviously got all that at your fingertips, and it's done, you know, without strings, so, and without a safety net, and so nicely done.
No, thank you. I like to think I've gotten better at those, and definitely, like you said, some challenges to make sure you saw everything right, have some interesting tidbits, and, you know, a race like the Derby, it's the first year I did it for that. Usually you get, you know, a few minutes to take it all in, watch it back, so that was an interesting challenge. But I appreciate the kind words, and I mean, after watching the race over and over, I don't think I saw missed too many things. You know, I think when we get these spread out fields, one thing about it is, you know, there were some troubled trips, but not as much as when we get these, you know, more compact, slower early fractions, and there's not as much separating, and horses have to go much more wide, horses get caught in traffic, so, you know, obviously confidence game was compromised some, and, you know, the horses on the front end were compromised going at it early, but I think when we do get these fast paces, there's probably less troubled trips than there are in years when there, you know, was a more compact group amongst the, you know, 20 or so horses.
We talked about that yesterday, in fact, how amazing it is that, you know, with 18, or in this case, or 18 in this case, sometimes 20, most times 20, ideally, it's amazing how spread out the field gets, and that there's really very few issues, all in all. I mean, no more so than you get, you know, on a going basis. Part of that is the fast, you know, the typically fast pace, and you know, the fact that there's going to be three or four horses on the front end and three or four horses on the back end, you know, that are going to be pretty much out of the way. So it leaves, well, yeah, let's say 12 to 14 horses to sort of spread out, and you got the long run down the stretch the first time, and there's plenty of room and an opportunity for everybody to find a spot, and knock on wood, it's relatively incident free. I mean, there's always going to be, there's always going to be horses stopping and getting tired and stopping in somebody's face, and you know people are going to check up and so forth. But overall, pretty cleanly run.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, getting out of the gate is where a lot of the issues can occur with these fast paces if you miss the break, and then horses that are caught wide. But yeah, I just can't really think of anybody other than Confidence Game that I thought, you know, other than the pace type, you know, racing against the flow of the race type stuff that, you know, I'm anxious to bet back or anxious to fade moving forward. So I totally agree with everything you said.
Well, how about some bean counting? How'd you do play-wise over the weekend?
I did good on Friday. I connected on the Oaks by keying South Lawn and Pretty Mischievous on top. Obviously, the top pick, South Lawn, had some trouble into the first turn, didn't fire her best shot, but fortunately I, you know, like Pretty Mischievous second best and decided to key them both on top in the try, and got a little bit lucky there for third with Web Paint not getting up, so that was favorable. And then on Saturday, gave some of it back. Was very tough, wasn't on Web Slinger, could have been on Nobles, maybe with a little bit of a spread, and you know, had as kind of a C, but wasn't able to connect on that. And then in the Derby, I was all in on Angel of Empire to hit the board. Unfortunately, I didn't have the combination that came in, Mage to me. You know, looking back and the way I spoke about it, I'm not surprised at all that Mage won. But like you said, we all have different angles, different ways of looking at it. And I think I let the lack of experience part of things and the slow breaks kind of lead me to not using on top, you know, and thinking of maybe, you know, the talent's there, but maybe another race or two of experience. But, you know, not a horse that I was surprised with, certainly at the upside. And what a great job by Javier Castellano, great job by the connection. Great to see Ramiro in the spotlight, a guy that I've known for a while on social media. And, just looking forward to seeing how he performs in Baltimore.
Excellent. Well, let's press on and look ahead, because as I always say, if you didn't connect over Oaks Derby weekend or Breeders' Cup weekend or any other big opportunity, the money you make today, tomorrow, Sunday, it's going to spend the same.
It counts the same. Yeah, that's what they tell me. It counts the same. So hopefully we can have a good run here the next 3 days, and we'll look at tomorrow. I got a couple of plays that I like a little bit, starting in race 4. Rain is in the forecast. It hasn't rained yet. It's been kind of a weird forecast. It looked like it was inevitable. Some last night never happened. So we'll see. We'll plan as if it's going to, we'll remain on the turf, but that remains up in the air. But I'm hopeful we do, because my long shot play of the day tomorrow comes in race 4, which is a maiden special for fillies and mares going a mile on the turf. And number 2, Masterful Meg, is an interesting proposition. Daughter of Mastery for Ian Wilkes. Ian having a real good run of it of late. One with Champagne Calling, big price on Friday to really boosting up those late horizontals on the Oaks card. But this one's a half to Michier Wood, who's done very good work for Ian, going long on the grass, and got off to a terrible start, pinched back on debut on April 19th, a common race at Keeneland. A lot of these are exiting. And didn't do all that much running, but that's not uncommon for a Wilkes runner. But did kind of take a lot, you know, not a lot of money, but 13-1 in a 12-horse field with some big barns. I thought that was, you know, at least a sign that, you know, maybe some pedigree players, but sign maybe this horse could run. And I just think with a better break and the experience under her belt at 15-1, she makes some sense as a potential long shot. So we'll go number 2, Masterful Meg, in race 4 tomorrow.
Masterful Meg.
And then the race after it, I like my best bet of the day is pick 5 and pick 4. And number 3, Mobster Gun, second start off the long layoff. Trainer Phil Sims, not good numbers first off the bench. I remember handicapping the April 23rd Keeneland race, which is a better event. Slow early pace in that race, but they ended up falling apart. Just thinking Mobster Gun, this is a prep for to drop a little bit in class at Churchill, and that's just the case here. I mean, Sims, really good numbers second off a layoff, last 101 starts, 22% win rate, 250 ROI, gets a favorable spot here. not a ton of speed, so hopefully Rafael Bejarano can get a good mid-pack ground-saving trip. But I think Mobster Gunn is the play at the 3-1, the second choice in the fifth.
Nice. So a little double action. The two in the fourth, Masterful Meg, 15-1, second for Ian, and Mobster Gunn the three. So a 2-3 double, 3-1 in the fifth.
Yes, sir. And then we'll skip over to the ninth, which is a second level allowance event for fillies and mares. Pretty fun race, and a number of these runners are exiting the April 15th race at Keeneland. It was the finale. It was, for those that were involved, it was the big contest day, so it was the last race on that card. Decided the contest, and I liked Ironic Twist that day, and I like her right back. I thought you could argue she was best in there, and her first start in Kentucky for Mark Glatt. The winner, Tarabi, and the runner-up, Yerso Cilia, who's in this spot, got a little bit better trip sitting off the pace, but Ironic Twist put away Top Gun Girl, the other speed, who's in here again, and just didn't have enough to hold off Tarabi, who's kind of a stakes level caliber horse for Cherie, and then Yerso Cilia, who's in here as well, but I thought did a lot of the dirty work that day, and now second off the bench, outside draw. I like this Mark Glatt trainee to get that third career win here at first in Kentucky.
Well, keep a very, for those of you that don't play the West Coast, Mark Glatt is as good a trainer as we have, and he will I think he's going to be running more and more horses in this half of the country, and he is fabulous.
He is, and the owner and breeder are one of his top connections out there. This is an Al and Sandra Kirkwood homebred, and just a horse that's done very little wrong. Won two races to start her career, went to the sidelines, ran a pretty good third in a good race at Santa Anita, and then ran the third I mentioned at Keeneland. So should get a real good trip from the outside, just stalking off the early pace. So hopefully we can avoid an early battle this time, and 5-1, a pretty fair offering. And then the features the William Walker, which hopefully will remain on the turf. That with the weather, we'll see what happens here. I wasn't really overly creative when I first handicapped the race. I wanted to try to beat number two Gaslight Dancer, the 2-1 favorite, because he got a perfect trip in the Palisades, a nice inside out one from Tyler Gaffleone, skimming the rail in the backstretch and then angling out and finishing. But it just looks like he's going to get that same trip in here, and just took a real big step forward, whatever metric you use, Brisnet, Thoroughgraph, just looks like he's, you know, maturing into himself. They spent $260 at the OBS April 2022 sale for the Son of City of Light. And it just looks like he's going to get another really good trip. So I didn't really have much desire in trying to beat him. If I were to try to beat him, I'd try to do so with number six, Crispy Cat. You know, I'm looking at the speed horses in here, and based on the riders, I think with Ricardo Santana Jr. aboard, I think Crispy Cat's going to get the most aggressive ride out of the gate. So maybe, since he didn't make the lead in the Palisades and kind of tired a little bit in that race Gaslight Dancer won, maybe he can make the front here. His win came in the States, came in Florida at Gulfstream in the Texas Glitter. Was up and on the pace that day. But hopefully he can get an aggressive ride. So I'm 2-6 in the William Walker.
Gaslight Dancer, Maker, and Crispy Cat. 2-6.
So two doubles, I guess. Two doubles.
Yeah, there you go. 12 with a little 2-6. And that's the ninth and the 10th. And the 4th and the 5th. The 2-3. All right.
Yeah, and then today, maybe one play for today. Let's see what I got for you here. I thought a price option might be in race 6. It looks like one of the more wide open races on the card, which kind of looks pretty chalky to me. Hard to find some overly creative opinions. But I thought Wicca Wisdom, the 2-horse in the 6th, attracting Luis Saez, second off the claim for Luis Ramirez. I thought the race at Aqueduct was a good setup for this spot. Looks to be sitting on a career best effort. I thought Wicca Wisdom in the 6th was one of the better price options on the card. And I thought that in the 8th, assuming this allowance race stays on the turf, doesn't look like a lot of speed. It's at a mile and an 1/8. And Root Cause was very impressive first off the layoff for Chad Brown last time. I think she has the early speed under Tyler Gaffalione to be right up and on the pace, if not setting the pace early. Definitely gets a little bit of a tougher bunch here than the maiden breaking performance when she was 1-5, but I think she looks like the real deal and should be able to handle this bunch as the favorite.
Number three. All right.
Race eight.
See number two in the sixth today. Wicca Wisdom. See if can make some magic. Yuck, yuck. And Brute Cause in the eighth, the three.
That's it.
Shap, appreciate it. Thanks for everything the last 2 weeks while we were in town, and look forward to talking to you from Baltimore next week.
Yeah, it was great having you around. Got to do a bunch of different stuff with you. Joining us on the radio show here was a lot of fun, your annual tradition. And, have fun in Baltimore. We'll talk next week.
Inside Churchill Downs tonight as well?
Yeah, Inside Churchill Downs. That's what we speak of. 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., ESPN 680, and ESPNLouisville.com for those, the majority of you that don't live in the Louisville area, if you want to check it out. And then, you know, myself and at Derby Media, Darren Rogers, will often tweet it out afterwards so you can catch it on archives.
Outstanding. Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Shap, 34. Thanks, Shap. There we go. And Scott Shapiro, folks. The activities are buzzing here, and you got all kinds of horsemen and connections coming in, picking up their material for tomorrow, for here. And in the meantime, the weather continues to pelt down a little bit. Let's get this rain out of the way now. Let's also get Dave Grenning in before we talk to the group. We're going to have a little group session where you got Woodbury, C. Beale Payne, the man with five names, and we'll have Dwight Hawley back again, as well as Bill Gallo. But right now, he's back home. He's back on Long Island. The mayor of Merrick, Dave Grenning. Dave, welcome home.
Yeah, I haven't seen much at home.
No, huh?
Thanks.
Well, at the very least, I hope you've had a good bagel. In fact, you know, it makes me realize that might be, everybody's trying to figure out what to come to Kentucky with. You know, Carlo Vaccarese brought his Italian food, and Frank Miramati's going to bring pizza to Lexington. How about if we you know, bring real water bagels to Louisville.
I'm in. You want to start a store?
Yeah.
Start a business?
Yeah.
I'm in. You know what? Let's look at that, because we might need something pretty soon.
Well, don't worry. I'm cultivating the steeplechase scene. But I'm telling you, and you know what? It'll give Priv something to do. He needs something to keep him busy.
Well, I'm sure he'll still be getting awards 2 and 3 years from now, so he'll keep it. He's still got a lot of touring to do.
It's so funny. Yesterday, he sends me a text with a picture. He was 24 hours behind me at Cheney's Dairy Barn up in Bowling Green. I didn't even know he was in the area. And I said, "Are you going to be around? I'm going to. When are you going to?" He's going home, and then Baltimore, and he's everywhere. He's like,
well, the only person it took. This is how big he is. There's only one person who was bigger in Nashville last weekend than Priv. That was Taylor Swift. He couldn't get a hotel room because Taylor Swift, he flew into Nashville on Derby Day, and they said the hotel rooms were astronomical, and he learned that Taylor Swift was playing in Nashville, and everyone who went there had to pay, you know, in addition to exorbitant ticket prices, they had to pay exorbitant hotel rooms. So him and his wife took a drive to Bowling Green and got a better room at a cheaper rate.
How about that? That is very funny. And of course, Taylor Swift is from here. She's from a suburb, and she's a big deal everywhere. But they were talking about that last night. She had a 3-night stand, and they say it was nuts. You've got the action there, and Belmont back underway, Dave. Before we talk about the Man of War and the rest of the stakes action this weekend, your Derby send-up, your recap, and, of course, your story that recapped the race itself was terrific. Well done.
No, I appreciate it. It was a quite the week, as everyone knows. But look, just to focus on the race itself, a couple things that stood out. I thought, first of all, kudos to the connections of Mage for getting the job done. Terrific ride by Javier Castellano and a well-deserved Derby win for Javier. He should not have gone his whole career without a Derby victory, and he seems to really be enjoying it. Relishing the moment. He got to throw out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium on Tuesday. It wasn't a bad pitch either. It wasn't George Bush-like, but it wasn't a bad pitch. And also, you know, a lot of things get overlooked, and I think Jareth Loveberry should get some, and maybe he has on your show, I'm not sure. Kudos for the trip he gave, for the ride he gave two Phils in his first Derby experience, and, you know, to come that close is... It's sort of a double-edged sword. It's bittersweet that he didn't win, but he acquitted himself quite well on that horse. And, yes, we all would have loved to seen the horse, you know, a little bit of a rematch in Pimlico. We're not going to see it. That's the way of the world now. It's the way of the world going forward. But I thought, Larry Ravelli had his horse well prepared, and Jared Loveberry gave his horse a tremendous ride to be second on two fills.
Absolutely. The opportunity for Mage in Baltimore. We'll obviously dig in next week, starting on Monday from high atop Old Hilltop. Other observations from the week and the weekend?
It was just such a, you know, I guess, I mean, I don't know how far down the rabbit hole we want to go. You know, you hear so much about transparency and stuff and in racing, and they're trying to do a better job of that. And it just gets worse and worse. It was very sort of disappointing that the state vet / racing regulatory body couldn't come out with some statement with more clarity on the scratch of Forte and why they left it up to the owner to have to tell everybody what happened. I understand at the exact moment, if his name is Nick Smith, didn't want to say something, but at some point you should put out a statement on why the favorite for the Kentucky Derby, on which multiple millions of dollars had already been wagered, was scratched. And forget the media for a second. It's just, you know, it's just a slap in the face to the customers of the sport who are the betting public. And I just think something needs to be done about that. And I hope if HISA gets off the ground and can do a better job of being more transparent, because it was really left a bad taste in my mouth.
You can also fold in, I had the discussion with Shug on Wednesday, and it took until he talked to Tyler Gaffleone on Sunday for him to find out he and Reeve, his son, who was handling the horse, why Talk of the Nation was scratched at the gate. Nobody bothered to even let the trainer know or the connections know what transpired. And luckily, Tyler called him, and Tyler explained how Talk of the Nation's leg got a little tied up. He got spooked a little bit by a horse that was warming up. And if you didn't hear this with Shug on Wednesday, and the vet said, "What happened there?" And he said, "Nothing happened there. He kind of jumped into the pony a little bit, and their legs got tied up. Well, I got to look him over." The next thing you know, he's scratching him, and Tyler said he begged him. He said he said he's fine, and it's unbelievable. I mean, nobody bothers to reach out to let the connections know why your horse was scratched. It's disheartening.
It's not right. No. It's not right.
I also will take the opportunity. I don't want to go diving into the whole situation and edgments on the Forte story regarding the hopeful. I read Sue Finley's piece in TDN for a wider view of everything that's transpired. And for the 10,000th time, the New York Racing Association does not test samples and adjudicate and call positives. They have nothing to do with the process. It's done by the New York Gaming Commission. If I see one more admonishment and one more accusatorial spew about Naira, Naira's got nothing to do with it.
That is true. You try to educate people, and it doesn't necessarily always take. And people have, as you said, have their preconceived notions of the situation and Naira, and don't even know that a gaming commission exists or any regulatory body exists. They think Naira holds all the cards, and they don't. And to actually think that this, let's get into it.
Yeah. There's plenty more intrigue, and these are always like an iceberg. There's the tip, and then there's what's under the surface. Dave got what seems like a really nice set of stakes, and reported earlier that Al Gold is running, and Brad Cox will be running Slip Mahoney in the Long Branch, and that leaves a nice group with some interesting up-and-comers, perhaps, in the Peter Pan, the traditional prep for the Belmont Stakes. We've got a Man of War, where, of course, you can't run a race like this without Charlie Appleby, and the Run Happy and the Vagrancy came up nice on Sunday.
Yeah, I guess chronologically, the Man of War, I think you look at Charlie Appleby, A, for his success in America, but B, no disrespect, but you kind of the older male turf division just kind of is hungry to me. It's just not that strong. You have to give some respect to Verstappen and the job Brendan Walsh has done to turn this horse around. He's won like three out of his last four, and good performance in the Elkhorn. But it was didn't bowl you over. It's sort of a Johnny come lately here to the stake scene, and kudos to the 9-year-old stalwarts Red Knight and Channel Maker still giving you their best efforts or what they have left here at nine. They've combined to make 84 starts and win 20 races. Obviously, their best days seem behind them, but Red Knight, you and I talked about Red Knight before the Breeders' Cup. I actually thought he had a chance to make an impact in the race. I didn't necessarily think, maybe not winning the race, but I thought, and he just didn't run any good that particular day. But he's come back this year with two solid efforts, a win in the McKnight, and just got beat ahead in the Viper Stop in the Elkhorn. But I think just because of the sort of the fresh face and the success that he's had here and knowing how to point to races and getting them ready to go, I'm going to look strongly at Warren Point.
That seems to be, you have to take every one of these seriously every time, they come over and invade. Even if they look a little suspect sometimes, it's amazing.
He hasn't hasn't been competing in the upper echelon of races.
Nope.
But I also don't necessarily think he's competing against the upper echelon of the male turf division. So.
Point well made. How about the Peter Pan?
I like Classic Catch's race in the Wood Memorial, and then the more I looked at it, I was not, I kind of fell a little bit less enamored with it. Yes, he did not too many horses made up ground, and he did make up ground, but I'm wondering, was he just passing some tired horses and maybe did it look better than it really was? Also thinking that he's probably a better two-turn horse, which is why he's made four of his five starts around two turns. I'll see what the blinkers do for him, but I guess I probably would defer to Brad Cox's first mission. Bishop's Bay first mission to the Preakness. Bishop's Bay, who's 2-for-2 and still seems to be a little bit green, according to Brad. And we'll see how we'll see if he makes that next step up off this race. But he he almost went down in the first turn in that allowance race at Fairgrounds, picked himself up and went on with it. And he was pretty game. I think he beat a Brad Cox horse in both his first two starts, including first mission, who's come back and win his maiden race. I like the fact he's drawn on the outside, and I can't imagine why he wouldn't be able to get a mile and eighth. So I would have to defer to Bishop Spey. If there's a horse that might intrigue me a little bit, it might be the rail horse, Arcangelo. Jenna Antonucci, this horse has sort of seemed to improve with each start. And by Arrogate, I can't imagine why that horse would, and out of a Tappet mare, I can't imagine why that horse wouldn't appreciate more ground. And it does look like, I didn't see it, but to talk to the clockers here, who watched the horse work May 3rd, 59-3, now a little odd that the horse hasn't worked back since, but seemed like a solid enough move. And you got Kentucky Derby winning rider Javier Castellano wants to ride. So I think if I was going to play around with a little bit of a long shot, it might be Arcangelo.
That Nick Tamaro with the same conclusion, actually, and it feels like a real horse for Jenna Antonucci. How about in the sprint, just a six-pack, just cannot seem to get sizable fields for these sprints.
No, it's that's another division that seems a little bit on the light side. I'd be interested to see what they get in Maryland, down for the Maryland sprint for Preakness Week. I was a little bit interested in Mr. Phil on the outside. For Rob Atras, came off a long layoff with a solid enough effort, and talking to him for my race preview story, he said, look, that track was really deep that day. He should have got a lot out of that race and makes a move forward. Now, he was bouncing around in the claiming ranks, and when he ran in stakes, he wasn't necessarily, competitive, but I'm just going to think that he could maybe get a nice outside trip, whether he's on the lead or just stalking and get the job done. The one thing about this race that, everywhere you look, these horses have all had their best races of seemings on Lasix. I guess the mystery horse here is Candyman Rocket, in a way, because he was in such good form, and then he ran an account fleet, and he was just brutal. Kind of got the impression that he just kind of chickened out a little bit in that race, and maybe in a shorter field with a better trip he can regain that form that he showed Gulfstream, but a little hard to take at a shorter price coming off that dismal performance.
How about on Sunday, you got a nice field for the Vagrancy?
Yeah, Dr. V for Butch Reed comes back off a layoff, and they have some high hopes for that horse. It's just a good starting point for her, maybe an opportunity to beat her though, with a couple others in there, but I know they have a lot of high expectations for her this year, and we'll see how it plays out.
Any other news or notes that ahead of Preakness? Anybody that is coming down and we should be watching out for?
From here?
Yeah.
Still kind of gathering that information. I mean, I guess we'll have to weekend workouts from Chad's stable and Todd's stable. I'm still trying to find out if Julia Shining is going to the Black Eyed Susan or not. Obviously we'll have Perform working on the weekend and Blazing Sevens working on the weekend for the Preakness. So we'll see how they do. Try and be out here for that and check them out. And, we'll see what these guys have in mind.
I will see you, Monday morning, I guess, upstairs.
Still working that out. I'm not sure if I'm coming down Monday or Tuesday. I'm thinking Monday. I was supposed to come down Tuesday, but I'm thinking I might hop in early Monday. I guess it all sort of depends on Mage's travel schedule, which maybe it's out there, but I just haven't seen it yet. If he's there and supposed to be on the track Monday, then I guess I should be there and be watching it. So good chance I'll be there Monday.
Outstanding. Dave Grenning, everybody. DRF Grenning. Dave, I appreciate it. I will see you, and I will make sure that Pioneer Pit Beef is ready for your visit.
That might be a Monday or Tuesday trip, and we might have to knock that out early in the week there, Steve.
Now you got it. Dave Grenning, folks, and always tremendous. I mean, looking forward to Dave down there, and he got his first crack at the Derby recap story, and Nicole Russo on Friday, her first Oaks, and the two of them both with a tremendous effort doing the recap. It's actually something. It's pretty amazing to actually watch it unfold. I sat there at the table with the DRF staff Friday evening and Saturday evening. Let's take our break here, our only break of the morning. We're coming to you live from the racing office at Iroquois, and the entire Brain Trust, every important person in steeplechase racing and in Nashville is sitting in this room. This is quite an assembly. And of course, by important, I mean Pepe and Marianne, and as opposed to all of you guys. The skies are brightening a little bit. Yeah, is that fair to say? I think, yeah. 1 o'clock, they're saying. All right. We're gonna get through. The good news, the ground will be fabulous for tomorrow's terrific seven-race card, which we will talk about with this group when we come back. Start the second half. James Scully, the top of hour three. Hammer will go out to California. And by the way, if you want to talk about some sort of a hunch bet, and I'm not a big hunch player, but at Santa Anita tomorrow in the San Luis Rey, how are we not betting the nine horse Opry tomorrow? Yes? Everybody betting Opry? All right. I you got to push. I also have got a horse for you tomorrow. And I think this will probably, I don't know if this will, maybe it'll drive her price down, potentially. There is a horse in the Goldfinch. There's a maiden. John Arnett is sending Broken Hearts Bay, who is one of two 20-to-1 shots. This is at 8:42 Central, so 9:42 Eastern. At 8:42 Central, Tina and I will be sitting down at the Optimist for dinner, actually, which we got a big push on from Billy Rappaport and Elizabeth, and I got a lot of concurrence from all the Nashville social scene. They all said they got one in Atlanta as well, the Optimist. But anyway, in the Goldfinch tomorrow, because I don't know if we'll have a chance later, and I don't think that Sully necessarily looked at Prairie Meadows. This filly of Arnett's, she's a bit of a refusenik. She doesn't seem to want to go past horses. She's got 2 seconds and 3/3. But she's coming off at all maiden special weights at Hawthorne, Churchill, and Tampa. She's going to get some pace to close into. And I got to think that Alex Berzer's got a real shot to break the maiden in the Goldfinch at a big price. Broken Hearts Bay, the seven horse, in the three-year-old filly, three-quarter Goldfinch, the first stake at Altoona. Prairie Meadows tomorrow, the Goldfinch. There's an idea. There's also a 12-to-1 who's okay. My Happiness is all right as well. This is a fun race. Christine Hicklin sends out My Happiness, but at 20-to-1, Broken Hearts Bay is me. Second half at the races, live from Iroquois, when we come back. SiriusXM.